the head of policy in the Department of Public Service and Administration, and I was born and bred in the Eden of Africa, Limpopo province.
Yes, you're correct. I thought that.
Okay, honorable members, I was briefed as I came in that please make sure all we need is just a high-level briefing. I just want to indicate, initially we were told that the meeting will start at 12, so some of my colleagues have just landed. They are on their way here. But I will be able to deal with all the issues. I just want to indicate in terms of just reiterating and also remind the members what is it that we are trying to solve with this bill. And the minister says it's a precursor to the implementation of the National Development Plan. This is the start now of implementing the plan that has been approved by the country. It's to build, it's a framework legislation for a seamless public administration so that there should be support in every sphere. There's been a number of challenges that the Auditor General has raised and other state institutions which we are addressing with this bill. And to ensure that the values of the Constitution are actually addressed throughout all the spheres of the government. We actually what should have happened was immediately the Constitution was passed, we should have had this bill coming in place because the Public Service Act was passed before the Constitution in 1994, and this bill should have come in once the Constitution came into effect. And we are taking on board all concerns. Our appearance in the select committee, our appearance in the our portfolio committee, and when we go to Parliament to respond to questions, we are taking into consideration all the inputs and the concerns that were raised by the representatives of the people. And we want to ensure that there is equitable distribution of resources across the three spheres of government. I just want to indicate one issue, and I think I will stop there unless if there are questions. With this bill, we are not, the bill does not undermine or interfere with the constitutional mandate of local government. All those issues have been addressed, and yesterday we met with SALGA, and that we confirmed in the bill. They are going to have their national municipality assembly on the 26th to the 28th, the week of the 26th, and they will be also looking into this bill, and we think that it will be a better participative forum that the inputs will come through. The bill does not undermine or interfere with the powers of the provincial government. Those powers are intact in terms of the constitution. But it ensures that there's a realization of the values and principles contained in Section 195 of the Constitution. And when you read each one of the clauses that we have, seeks to address or solve a particular problem. There's no clause that has been put there just for the sake of putting the clause. It addresses a particular problem, and there is an opportunity, if you want us to address that, we can address it, but there is no time. It is all about the management of public administration, and this is what the bill is all about. I think I will end the chairperson as an introduction.
Complete everything.
I would like now just to go in terms of the context of the bill. Starting with, if you go in the slides that we have, maybe let me deal with first slide number 10. The public comments and public participation. How far have we gone in terms of that? We started with a consultation on the bill before adoption by cabinet. And as you all are aware, the bill was introduced in Parliament in 2008 in May, and it was withdrawn in November 2008 when there was the change of the administration for further consultation. When the minister came on board, Minister Sulu came on board, she resuscitated that process, although there was work which was being done behind the scenes. The bill then was published on the 31st of May with the 28th of June deadline. But there were requests from a number of people that we interacted with, and especially we got a letter from the Premier of the Western Cape, who asked in writing for the extension to the 31st of July, which was granted. We received numerous submissions. 27 submissions were received by the 31st, and even after that date, there were other submissions that came following the closure, and we didn't close those submissions. There were extensive consultation with numerous individuals, government departments, municipalities, organized labor, and we had double dipping with organized labor. We had consultation with them, which was bilateral. And then we also had consultation with them under the umbrella of NEDLAC. The NEDLAC process was very intensive. It did start on a right foot because labor in NEDLAC was saying, no, this bill is unconstitutional, so we are not prepared to engage on it. And through that process, we actually found one another to say, how do we make this bill constitutional, the bill that was published? And the discussion came from that premise. We finalized the NEDLAC consultation on the 26th of September, and a report was issued, which that report is called a Certificate of NEDLAC, which indicates the areas where there is agreement and the areas where there is differences. And when you look into the differences in that report, and I hope it has been submitted, but if you want that pack, we will submit their report, because NEDLAC is supposed to send the report directly to Parliament. But we will make sure that you get that report. And the areas which were of difference is more in terms of enhancing it than to dismiss the legislation. There is acceptance in the NEDLAC, all the partners in NEDLAC, that we need this bill to ensure that service delivery improves in the country. There have been media interaction, business. We received even written comments from business organizations, civil society institution, the academia, and I've already indicated that SALGA was also consulted. And actually, in our consultation in NEDLAC, because we established a multidisciplinary team, SALGA officials were part of our team in NEDLAC, and we also consulted a number of legal experts. Now, in terms of the contents of the bill, if we can go to slide number 14, the slide number 13 is just pointing out a few of the definitions that in the presentation you will find that we use that. But that is not the full list of all the definitions. In the bill itself, you will find all the definitions. In terms of the scope of application, it says the bill applies to public administration, and we can see up there how we define public administration, which is the public service consisting of provincial and national municipalities and their employees. And this is derived from Section 195(2) of the Constitution, which provides that the principles governing public administration applies to administration in every sphere of government, organs of state, and public enterprises. And you can see in terms of the scope, we have left out B and C, which is the organs of other organs of state and public enterprises. It will only apply to public administration. The bill provides for mobility of staff within public administration, across local governments, across the spheres, national, provincial, and local, and we believe that this is going to be a catalyst in ensuring that service delivery is actually prioritized, and where there is need in any sphere of government, we can deploy people that are experts. But in terms of transfer of employees, the transfer can only happen with the consent of the staff. It's not going to be forced transfers, and that the unions were very adamant on it. At some point they indicated that if this one is not out, we might have to call for a national strike and say, this government that you put in power, it now wants to force you to be transferred without your consent. And they mentioned a number of examples in terms of where this could be abused. Specific examples in departments where they indicated that there are this abuse of this thing. So the bill says we will, the employee has to consent first. But in terms of secondment, because this is a short-term arrangement where we say there's a problem of service delivery out there, we want to second you for a year or for 2 years, go and do specific work and you can come back. That can be done without the consent of the employee, because their position, wherever they come from, will still be available. They can still come back to that position just to deal with the specific service delivery issues. And it also makes provision for the transfer of employees upon transfer of functions, transfer or assignment of functions. If national government or provincial government is saying we are assigning functions to a local government or to another department, then that transfer is done. And it's done in terms of Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act. The bill makes provision for the prohibition of conducting business with the state, which is clause 8 to 9, and it also makes provision for disclosure of financial interest. This is to professionalize and ensure that the employees that we have are people of integrity. In a number of Auditor General's reports, they would mention that their employees who are benefiting out of the procurement processes of government, even in their own departments, they are benefiting out of that. And what we are saying in the bill is that no employee will be allowed to do business with the state. And it's not only with your own department. You cannot do business if you are in the local government in Western Cape and you go and you do business with Stellenbosch. It's prohibited. And failure to comply with this prohibition will constitute serious misconduct. And there is also a it's a criminal offense which a person can be incarcerated for a maximum of 5 years. And for the purpose of these clauses, employee includes persons contemplated in Section 12A of the Public Service Act and a person performing similar function in municipality. These are the people we call advisors, because advisors in terms of the definition of employees are not employees. They come in for policy advice to executive authorities, and they are not involved in the administration of the department, so they are not defined as employees. But for the purpose of this clause, in terms of prohibiting them from doing business with the state, we have included them as employees. Then the next area that I want to deal with is slide number 17, which deals with the capacity development and training. In this clause, the bill seeks to promote capacity development of employees by providing for the establishment of the National School of Government. What we envisage with the National School of Government, which has already been established under the Public Service Act, which we converted Palama into a National School of Government, but as soon as the bill comes into effect, that will be in terms of this act. The school will, through education and training, promote progressive realization of values and principles governing public administration and enhance quality, extent, and impact of development of human resource capacity in institutions. So it will become a central place where we can develop skills, ensuring that even if you are in local government, you will be able to go through the programs that are developed through the school. But we are not going to do away with institutions that are already established in provinces. We'll just ensure that whatever is being taught, if you say you attended the transport or logistic management course from Western Cape Academy, you will be able to apply what you have learned wherever you are, whether in local government and so on, that it will be the same content in terms of that course. You will be able to function effectively wherever you are. If you are transferred to local government, if you are transferred to provincial government, you will be able to perform effectively. The bill requires that the head of this institution, through education and training of its employees, develop human resource capacity in their institution to the level that enables the institution to perform its function in an efficient, quality, collaborative, and accountable manner. And the focus here is developing people for the benefit of the institution, not developing people for their own individual benefits. That's a different philosophy that we have than what we currently have with Palam. The bill makes provisions, if you go to slide 19, it makes a provision on ethics and integrity. And that is clause 15. What we want to achieve here is to build a public administration guided by professional ethics, integrity, and discipline, and which is in line with Section 195 of the Constitution. So as a result, the bill is going to establish what we call a public administration ethics, integrity, and disciplinary technical assistance unit to provide, amongst others, technical assistance and support to institutions in all spheres of government regarding the management of ethics, integrity, and disciplinary matters relating to misconduct within public administration. With this institution, we believe that, and together with prohibiting public servants from doing business with the state, we believe that we'll be able to deal with corruption in all spheres of government. And the bill requires the minister to report to Parliament twice a year on the activities of this unit. with regard to norms and standards, which is a critical issue about this bill, that the norms and standards are uniform throughout the public administration. The bill seeks to empower the minister to prescribe minimum norms and standards on, for example, promotion of values and principles referred to in Section 195 of the Constitution. And when she prescribes these norms and standards, especially that first bullet, it will be in consultation with the executive authority responsible. She's not going to make norms and standards for education without concurrence of the Minister of Education. They must be working together in terms of that, especially when it comes to those values and principles, because they go beyond what we will say is her normal mandate. Norms and standards in terms of capacity development and training, I think in our interaction with the unions, they indicated that currently Treasury realized there's a void in this thing, and in terms of MF, Municipal Management Finance Act, they introduced issues of minimum qualification that actually is creating problems. And yesterday they appealed to us to say, let's make sure that when this bill is passed, these things is done centrally, and DPSA should be the one that actually leads. Because finance is very good in terms of dealing with finances, and we are good in dealing with human resource development issues. The bill also allows the minister to make standards, norms and standards in terms of ICT. I've already referred in terms of integrity, ethics, and discipline, including the disclosure of financial interest. And it says, minister must prescribe minimum norms and standards promoting values and principles referred to in Section 195 of the Constitution in consultation with the relevant executive authority. This allows for a degree of uniformity in relation to the norms and standards across public administration, which should have a positive impact on service delivery. And I've already indicated an example in terms of if it impacts on education. And we also, through this bill, establish what we call the Office of Standards and Compliance, whose objective are to promote and monitor compliance with minimum norms and standards set by the minister, taking into account that the three spheres of government are distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated. So those issues, we will always be guided by that. It gives the minister the power to make regulation on, amongst others, matters required or permitted by the bill to be prescribed. And the minister will make regulations insofar as they apply to the municipalities in consultation with the minister responsible for local government, minister responsible for finance, and organized local government. And that the minister must publish proposed regulations for public comment for a period of no less than 30 days in the Government Gazette. And the bill repeals Section 4, 14 and 15 of the Public Service Act. That's the section that deals with issues of capacity development, and the section that deals with issues of transfer of employees. And there's an act which we call the Transfer of Staff to Municipalities Act, which gives the MECs to transfer staff to local government, and that is going to be repealed, and the provisions of this bill will apply. Honorable members, as I move to conclusion, the revised bill has been informed by the submissions we received from the public, and is therefore a net outcome or product of these consultations. The following are the major areas. From the bill that we published on the 31st of May, 2013, there was the issue about constitutional powers of the three spheres, which everywhere we went, it was a song. The bill has been amended to recognize the constitutional independence, interrelatedness, and distinctiveness of the three spheres of government. On the issue of the transfers, initially we were saying you can transfer without consent. The bill provides for transfer with consent only. The issue of collective bargaining, the collective bargaining provisions have been removed. The current collective bargaining arrangements will continue to exist. And we received a number of issues around there. Some people were saying, imagine you are in negotiating centrally. So it means that if there is a strike, this country comes to a halt, whereas now you negotiate differently, you can manage that process. It takes away the issue of the establishment of government components at local government. This area was removed. The establishment of... Now, there was also a clause that dealt with the employees standing as candidates for election, which it was saying that if you stand for election, whether for provincial, local, or national government, immediately they confirm you on the list and say, yes, IEC, we say this one is a candidate for election. The provisions was you are deemed to have resigned. And that clause has been removed, and we're saying the status quo should remain. In the Municipal Systems Act, there's provision that deals with that. In the Public Service Act, there's provision that deals with that, which says it's only at the point of, in the Public Service Act, at the point when your party succeeds and you are now on your way to Parliament, that's when you resign from the public service. So that stays. There was also a provision regarding the cooling off period, which we were saying, if you were a DG or a DPG or a senior manager, whoever, you were involved in the procurement, in the management of procurement processes, that you cannot go and you now join an institution that you have given tenders. It created a lot of hype, and some people are saying you have to pay for that. So we removed that issue that is dealing with cooling off period. And we also had a provision that amended the Public Service Commission Act to give direction and also to extend its powers to local government. And we said the Public Service Commission Act has to be amended separately, should not form part of this bill. Honorable members, this bill is a framework legislation, and we have cut it to the bone, which is responding to the Constitution. It seeks to resolve the problems that the representatives of the people have identified for many years. And government has listened to the issues. There have been extensive consultation at all levels with all stakeholders. And following the submissions and consultations, we have trimmed the bill from more than 150 pages to a mere 17 pages. And that 17 pages also include the objects of the bill, the memorandum, the explanatory memorandum of the bill. We believe this is an important bill which contains all ingredients to build a capable state defined in the National Development Plan. And there's consensus that, except for other chapters within the NDP where there's some contestation and that it must be adjusted, Chapter 13, and I think 12, 13, which deals with the capable state, everyone agrees that we should start with that. And this is our first attempt to deal with those issues. We expect that the fourth parliament should pass this bill. We don't want to take this bill to the fifth parliament. And that, as you rise, then you will be handing over this bill to the fifth administration for implementation. And we don't think that we can just implement this bill one Big Bang approach. It will be implemented in a phased manner. And once you give us a go-ahead, we will have a plan that we will put in place, which will say this is how we're implementing the bill. And we'll come and account every time to you and say this is how we are implementing this bill. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm not yet open for the hands. I'll do that at the right time. I think I want to make one thing clear before I give members. You expect this committee to pass this thing before we rise. It's a request. Well, I'm not asking a question. I'm merely expressing that it's a request. However, it should be noted by the department that this is the committee of parliament, not the committee of cabinet. It will follow all parliamentary procedures. And that should be noted. Even the minister must know that you are in the committee of parliament.
And they are making a request for that. It might not be run according to the way the cabinet wants the bill to be done, because there are certain procedures. You are cycling lots of things.
You are many interventions that may come from higher authority must be noted, but we are making a commitment that the fact that we are here today, it demonstrates that the committee is serious about taking the bill to its conclusion. That I just wanted to make that clear.
I'll then make the members to engage when they want to engage.
Honorable Bunda.
Thank you, Chair. I've listened very clearly, and thank you for just briefing us on this again. The last time I had a problem that I couldn't sit and talk and everything. The area that you've spoken on, the prohibitions and disclosures, I've got a simple question. Is this possible? Possible in the sense of if you professionalize the public service. Professionalism goes with ethics. So I just want to find out if that's possible concerning the disclosure of public and don't deal with public service and government and all that. That's the question, is it possible? The other thing is on your slide 17. I wanted to hear you. It's a very good idea if you have a school, National School of Government, to capacitate people and all that. How will then, as you said, you don't train people or educate people for themselves. You train and educate them to be capacitated for the job that they must do. How different is that? I mean, if you train me to be a very good teacher, how is that that I'm not heavy? How is it possible that I won't benefit because you trained me? So how will it? And the last question is, this baby that gives us headaches every time when it comes to collective bargaining. I see you said, when I ask the question, what is the current existing collective bargaining status? Because you see, put it in the bill here, collective bargaining provisions have been removed. The current collective bargaining arrangements continue to exist. Now my question to you is, what is the current existing collective bargaining? Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. Let's welcome the presentation. Well done.
Chair,
Chair, the only issue is that in terms of the implementation plan, is that going to be presented to Parliament for Parliament to look into as to how feasible that program is going to be? Because you are indicating that it will be implemented in phases. And we know that it will be the fifth parliament, as you indicated, that will implement that particular program. Secondly, you just indicated that Salga and the unions have agreed that they are with you, they have been with you all along. I hope most that Salga has invited us to this meeting that they have in the last week of November. Because it would be interesting to understand their view in as far as this particular bill is concerned. Because you indicated that discussions will take place there. Because clearly it was stated by the minister, and you are re-emphasizing that through NADLEC, we haven't explored or dealt with the areas of disagreement in as far as this particular bill is concerned, seriously. So that we have a clearer understanding in as far as that particular area is concerned. I'm not saying come back and give us those areas. But I think it is important for the committee to have a clearer understanding if those discussions will be taking place in as far as Salga is concerned, in as far as the unions are concerned, and whatever. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before you reply, you want to raise?
Chairman, no, I'm not sure that this bill is the solution for the problems that we have in our administration. I'm not sure that we will have stopped all these things that's going on, and I believe that there's other ways that we'll have to implement it to get our administration on a better basis, especially in local government.
That also few things. When the minister made the presentation, Mark, I'm not sure whether I might be wrong. Colleagues will assist. On the cooling period, is that you are saying 12 months? But in this presentation, slide 25, it says it is removed. Maybe if you could get that to the rest. And on this thing, slide 19, public administration ethics, integrity, and technical. So, how does that relate to other anti-corruption units? How do they relate, or how will this be distinguished from these other anti-corruption agencies? Especially when it comes to the applicability, effectiveness, the efficiency in operating. I think maybe it should be clear so that we don't create many units that at the end of the day sort of clash when they're supposed to operate. I think those are the issues that we need to clarify so that members are able to also be equipped as material sites.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question I will deal with is on prohibition. Is this prohibition and also disclosure of financial interest, is it possible that you can prohibit? Yes, we believe that it's possible. Currently, there's nothing in any law that says a public servant cannot do business with the state. It just says disclose your interest. And once you disclose, you can go ahead and do business with the state. And there's nothing you can do if you find that a person is doing business with his own department. The department you are working with, because there's nothing that says you can't do business with the state. You will not participate in the procurement process, but the issue is you can influence it in a different way. And we're finding it difficult to actually hold people accountable for that. And it becomes very difficult even when you investigate, try to discipline a person who says, I was far away from the procurement process. My unit actually is far from this thing, but this person is dealing with colleagues in the department or colleagues in the next department. So if you say you are prohibited, you take a huge risk to do that. So public servants will think twice, because you can be arrested and you can go to prison for a maximum of 5 years and you will lose your job. So it's possible, but as I indicated in terms of the issue of disclosures, one issue that we'll need to deal with, because we have already developed an electronic system of disclosures, which is applied now in national and provincial. But it started this year. But in local government, there were different IT systems. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done if we are going to extend this to local government. That's one of the issues that we'll need to face in the process. And obviously, there will be issues with the new system that we have implemented. We still have to improve that. After a year, we'll assess how is it working. The next point is, how different is it to train for an institution versus training for an individual? The individual will have the knowledge, but you will be quite sure that when that individual gets that knowledge, it's the knowledge that the department requires. Currently, we issue people with bursaries, and they go, they do MBA because their personal development plan says, I agree with my manager and this is what is going to happen. The different thing will be, there will be a research unit both in the DPSA and also in the School of Government, which will analyze Auditor General's reports of the Public Service Commission, parliamentary questions and statements of members, look into the strategic plans of departments and say, these are the areas where, as a department, you lack this one. You need to develop your people around this area. And we are developing a program that is going to deal with these issues. So in that, you are coordinating this thing for the benefit of the public service. Not an individual coming and say, oh, I need to do religious studies. In correctional services, maybe they can do that because they've got the priests in there, but it must be relevant what they are, the chaplain and so on. Yeah. In terms of collective bargaining, the current status is that local government has got their bargaining council, the South African Local Government Bargaining Council. and the national and provincial, we've got what we call the public service sector bargaining coordinating council, which negotiates salaries at national and provincial. So those are done separate and at separate times. But what will happen will be, going forward, there will be more coordination in terms of the mandates that are given out there, so that you don't find us giving different increases that create problems. The implementation plan, once the act, the bill, if our wish has been granted and it becomes an act, we definitely will prepare an action plan, which we will be available to come and present to the committees. In terms of the NEDLAC, I have, what are the areas of differences? If you want me to share that with you, I'm willing to share that. What are the areas that they differed? Maybe just high level on the issue of the, initially we're saying we are creating what we call the Anti-Corruption Bureau, which we've changed now to the Ethics, Integrity and Disciplinary Technical Assistance. Their difference was that, yes, they agree with the establishment of an institution that will deal with corruption, but they don't believe it goes far enough. They want us to have a unit that will be independent, which will report directly to Parliament. And for that reason, they said, no, they are rejecting this whole issue of the anti-corruption bill. And when you are creating an institution which is to deal with discipline, it's an executive responsibility. Discipline is an executive responsibility. You cannot now ship it to Parliament. So that was the major difference. The next issue that and business supported them in that they said initially what we presented had what they called the mojo, and it has lost the whole mojo, it's weak and so on. So they were at par with the two of them, both the parties. And the next issue was on minister determining the basic qualification requirement for promotion or for transfer. That they said, no, this might be used to get rid of our members who might not necessarily get that qualification. And the issue there is that it's just an interpretation issue, because those, and we explained to them, those people who are there, the only thing that will make them to lose their job is if they don't perform in terms of their performance agreement. Not that they didn't acquire this qualification. But those who come in after them have to go through the tests to make sure that when they come in, they will be able to do that. And if there are gaps, we will take them to the school of government to train them. That was the next issue. The other issue was with the issue of the regulations, where unions were saying the regulations must be submitted to NEDLAC for negotiation. And business agreed with us to say, no, you cannot bring the regulations to NEDLAC. And we indicated that we cannot use this legislation to decide on the rules of NEDLAC. If Minister of Labour, who is responsible for the NEDLAC process, brings this issue up and say all regulations that are done will be negotiated at NEDLAC, and it agreed, cabinet agrees with that, and everyone agrees with it, we will abide by that. But our minister does not have that competency to make that into the law that we are processing. So those are the areas where there were differences, and they said transfer without concern, and actually, no, the secondment without concern and secondment, they say the state might use this to avoid filling vacant posts, and they don't want that. So they raise that as a matter of difference to say it could be used instead of us employing people, we will end up just second people. You second this one, you move him from here, you move that person to the other side. And they said, for that, which is an interpretation issue, they don't support this issue of the secondment without consent. So those are the high issues that you will see in the report in terms of the differences. And on the salary issues, I think if they have invited you, they said we must come based on the discussion that we have yesterday, and we will respond to some of the issues that they have raised on the legislation. So we will be going there to their assembly. There's a comment that says the bill won't solve all problems that we are encountering in local government. We believe it's a major step. We believe it's a major step, and it might not solve all the problems. But currently there is this void that we want to make sure that we fill, which the Constitution requires of us. It's a major step that I think going forward we can improve on it. On the cooling off period, this matter was there, but it's no more. You will, when you look into the bill, it's no more there through the consultation process that we had. The last point, I just want us to refer you to the, so that when I deal with the issue of the public administration integrity, ethics and integrity and disciplinary technical assistant units, and we were assisted by the security class that will make sure that there is a distinction. What we have put here distinguish what the law enforcement agencies are doing and what this one does. And the initial one which we had, we were saying it will be dealing with misconduct related to corruption. And they said that is going to create confusion. You need to do away with that, and we want you to go even broader. When it comes to disciplinary issues, you should deal with all disciplinary issues. If you identify that there is systemic problems in dealing with disciplinary issues in any institution, you should have the power to go and you intervene and you assist. That's why the issue of putting this as a technical assistance unit, because we will go and actually assist in dealing with the disciplinary cases. I just want you to go to chapter 6, 15. There's an area where I just want to find it, because when you identify, when the head of an institution, yes, it's section on page 10 of the, if you have a copy of the legislation, you don't have the bill, I'll read it to you. Section 15, 15.5, 15.5a, it says, when an institution discovers an act of corruption. Such corruption must immediately be reported to the police for investigation in terms of any applicable law, including the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. And then B says, issues of misconduct emanating from criminal investigations must be reported to the unit and the relevant head of the institution for initiation and the institution for disciplinary process. And when you go to 6A, it says notwithstanding 5B, because if you leave 5B as is, it means that I will have to wait for the criminal investigation to be concluded. It says notwithstanding 5B, every institution has the responsibility to ensure that it deals with matters relating to misconduct without undue delay. So you can deal with a case, because it's a misconduct, somebody maybe was involved in the procurement process and they ended up appointing their friends. And it's clear it's a misconduct, you're not supposed to do that, you deal with it if you have sufficient information. But you will work closely with the law enforcement agency. That's what makes the difference between us and the law enforcement agencies. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that takes care of the purpose. We'll still review it thoroughly next year when we're going to run with the program of the committee in terms of all those steps that are needed. Thank you very much. May we just get one moment to welcome your colleagues. you are heartily welcome. You are welcome in the moment of adjourning what you are supposed to be doing. We will apologize because the meeting was supposed to start now at 12 o'clock. So we took advantage of the policy 8OD to say, precisely because what we needed to be doing, which is important, was to actualize Section 76, because the previous briefing we had was in terms of Section 75. So we wanted to actualize Section 76. So we took advantage and say when the colleague comes here, would also they will also have time to, if your flight are still late, you'll have time to go to Waterfront to leave some money here. we really welcome you and thank you for coming, but also thank the HOD for taking us through. Remember, you took us through this deal with the minister, and most of the things are done. He also been able to clarify certain things. In fact, Section 76 through this person today is actualized. And we thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Enjoy your time for the moment that you will be here. And leave the letters and text with whatever the city needs. Thank you very much. We'll meet in the process of going to the province. Thank you very much.